everyone. This is Henrik, and you're listening to Red Eyes Radio. Good to have you with us. Hope you had a good week so far. Well, today we're going to fulfill all your false flag needs, in case you have been missing them lately. We're going to focus on the bizarre Sandy Hook shootings with James Fetzer. We're coming up on the three-year anniversary here soon, and he's released a book called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Coincidentally, the San Bernardino shooting was actually just unfolding when we were doing this recording, and many details were still very sparse at that point. We did talk a bit about it, though, but not too much. It was simply too early to tell at that point. Now, of course, we know that it was two Arabs, two Muslims, a husband and a wife. We do not know much about their motives yet and why they chose to go after this social services center either. It has still been entertaining, though, watching the reactions from the various people out there, rooting for whatever side they wanted to demonize. So the liberals wanted it to be whites, and those on the opposite side wanted it to be Muslims. But, much more is left to be revealed about that. I think it's very possible that the intelligence services knew that something was up and that they more or less allowed this to happen. It's possible. They stood down, basically. They had known about this guy for some time. They knew he had been in contact with some, what they called known extremists, both over phone but also over social media. And, I guess you'd think that with the huge NSA spying apparatus in place, they'd be capable of finding out more. I don't know. But police were doing some exercises appropriately nearby as well. So, might have been another drill going live. Well, it certainly looks like there was people dead, though. I mean, I can't speak for James Fetzer on this. But as I was looking through the footage after the recording, after the show we did, it definitely looked pretty gruesome to me. But who knows? Might be some big film crew over there in California, Hollywood, who knows how to do stuff like this live. So anyway, the obvious here is false flags happen. Yes, and they seem to be quite frequent as well. But I don't believe that every single mass casualty event is a false flag. I think there is enough wackos dedicated to the destruction of other people to be able to pull stuff like this off now and then. But we'll see. San Bernardino, more will have to come out before we can, say more about this. What we can say more about is Sandy Hook, however, since much more time has gone by and more work and research has been done on this. And I urge any open-minded person out there to look into some of the documentation that we'll be talking about today, and some of the work of other people that have been looking into this as well, the bizarre practices of the police and the authorities, and we'll talk more about this today. There's some excellent videos on this online as well, and we'll link some of those up. But James Fetzer is a former Marine Corps officer. He's a McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He has published widely on the theoretical foundations of scientific knowledge, computer science, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, and evolution and mentality. He has a number of books out there, including The 9/11 Conspiracy, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, Murder in Dealey Plaza, and also the one we talked about last time he was with us called And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either. It's on the Beatles, the Holocaust, and other mass illusions. Quite interesting. Do check that out. But let's go into the world of false flags now. Welcome, Jim. It's good to have you back again. Thank you so much for coming on. It's a lot of things going on. It's a hectic time, but we appreciate you coming back and talking with us.
It's my great pleasure, Heinrich. I'm delighted. I think Red Eyes Radio is outstanding.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate that. And, of course, we're going to get deeper into your work today on Sandy Hook. We touched upon this more or less briefly last time you were on together with Ulla Damegård, but we really wanted to go deep into this topic now and focus more on your book, of course. And there's a number of things, a number of developments that have occurred in the last few weeks here, among others, the book being banned from Amazon. That's something I want to talk about a bit later, too. But give us a little bit of an overview first. I mean, I do want to get into the main outline of the book and why you wanted to pull all of these threads together of this work that you've been doing over a few years now, Jim.
Well, there are 13 contributors to the book, Heinrich, including six PhD, current or retired college professors, who have done a huge amount of work on Sandy Hook, virtually from the beginning. One is James Tracy, for example, who's a professor at Florida Atlantic. He published perhaps the first scholarly article about Sandy Hook, taking apart the press conference held by Wayne Carver, the medical examiner for the state of Connecticut, whose role, I think, was central to the credibility of the performance that was taking place. because he seemed to be an authority figure, a medical figure, a state official. And yet even he, conscious of his own guilt in participating in this, remarked in passing cryptically that he hoped this didn't come crashing down on the people of Newtown later, which many of us wondered about at the time, but where we now understand quite completely, and where some of our contributors have simply done extremely extensive work. For example, Dr. Eelwin, she's a retired professor from a West Coast university who uses a pseudonym, had published over 80 articles on her Fellowship of the Mind's blog about Sandy Hook, and others similarly, just terrific work. So what I did was bring together the very best work on Sandy Hook. I have a great deal of experience editing and put together a book that's apparently so powerful that it's panicked the Obama administration. This Amazon.com banning is just absolutely stunning, and it seems to me to bear comparison with the attempt to thwart the publication of the Pentagon Papers in 1971.
Well, you know, as we know, censorship usually kind of works in the opposite direction for them. It gains more kind of interest, I'd say, to the book as well. But how were you announced about this? Did they write to you, or did they just remove it from the catalog?
Well, it happened in a couple of steps, but I think your point's impeccable. In fact, because it's been banned, once it was banned, I released it to free to the public as a PDF. And it was really ironic, because now I think instead of maybe selling 4,000 books, we may have 4 to 40 million readers, Heinrich. So right. This is really huge. Now, what happened was the sequence was on the 18th of November. I mean, the book became available on the 22nd of October, 425 pages. Very comprehensive, very thorough, very detailed, just chock full of photographs, evidence, documents, and all that. One of our most important conclusions was the school had been abandoned by 2008. It was not in compliance with Americans with Disabilities Act requirements. It was in a decrepit state externally. Mold, weeds, cracks in the walls. It wasn't compliant with the Americans for Disability Act conditions that would have had to have been implemented by then to make it wheelchair accessible and so forth. None of the familiar white and blue painting for the parking areas or the signage, handicap parking only and so forth. Inside, it was just full of storage. One of the striking features of the school, considering this was the 14th December, of 2012, and it was a kindergarten through fourth grade school, is it ought to have been abounding with all kinds of Christmas decorations, Hanukkah preparations, and that. But all that we have in the entire school virtually is that in one classroom that fronts on the school, classroom 10, where a lot of the shooting purportedly took place, there are four windows in a row that have candle diagrams. And that turns out to be very significant, because they'd be shot out, one of them in particular, during the alleged event, and yet we turn out to have a photograph where a SWAT team is already present. The windows are undamaged. The flag is at full staff. We find crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed, and Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, is there with his arms folded waiting for the arrival of his portable tent. I mean, it's all completely outrageous. So, What we had the book out on the 22nd, Heinrich. It was doing very, very well. We sold nearly 500 copies already in less than a month. There were 80 reviews on Amazon, clustered in two groups, technically a bimodal distribution. You had a whole lot of five-star reviews from persons who'd actually read the book. And then there was a whole host of one-star reviews from persons who had not. So it was a typical kind of disinformation op to try to bring down the average rating, so people might casually think, well, it can't be of much interest if it only has, you know, averages 3 stars or whatever, without appreciating what was going on.
Right, right. So tell us more about the school here and the state of the school beforehand, and if you think this is a big key to the event itself. I mean, was it, I don't know how to put it, Larry Silversteined, if you know what I'm saying?
No, it had simply been abandoned. I mean, right. after the event, there was a debate of whether to refurbish the school or tear it down, which was a pseudo-debate because they already knew it had to be torn down. The Newtown Bee published an article about it saying how the school was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards, and that therefore it would be very difficult to refurbish. But they had that information before 2008. And we had no computer activity from that school using a technique that showed computer activity at other schools. And, you know, I mean, the evidence is simply overwhelming. Here are a couple of minor indications, but telling nevertheless. We have a photograph of the parking lot when it's empty, and there have been so many winters with no use of the parking lot, there are no oil stains in the parking lot. Now, anyone who knows the typical propensity of automobiles to leak understands that's very odd. Here's another. It was a very cold day. It was 28 degrees ground temperature, but there's no steam, no heat rising from the building, which indicates that it wasn't a heated building. And, you know, once you understand there were no students there, of course, everything falls into place. I published a whole blog about it. I have a series about debunking the Sandy Hook debunkers. Number one, mm-hmm. was it an operating school, on my blog, and I go through a mountain of evidence and show you videos inside and out to demonstrate it wasn't even an operating school. Now, apparently what we did was just too good. Because it has just created a frenzy of activity, I mean, including this banning that went forward in a sequence like this, Heinrich, on the 18th of November. Now, that's less than a month since its publication on the 22nd, when it passed all the guidelines that were required. I was contacted by Inside Edition, which is a television program, not a great moment, but they wanted to do my interview me about the book. So I said, fine. They sent me up for an interview an hour and a half later. And they wanted me to use a special software, something called FaceTime rather than Skype. And I believe now it was because it would be difficult for me to record what would happen, what would ensue. And when I made contact, I found myself electronically, of course, in a huge room, just enormous. Clearly not a television studio. And there was a fellow there, not a host of Inside Edition, who happens to be Deborah Norval, but just a guy who didn't introduce himself, didn't introduce me, didn't talk about the book, just began besieging me with questions. Why are you attacking the parents of children who died at Sandy Hook? You know, right, just taking right. for granted. And I explained, there's no evidence anyone died at Sandy Hook. That I had, you know, 13 contributors, including a half a dozen a PhD, current or retired college professors. We've established the school was closed by 2008, went on and on. He kept hitting me, is that the best you have? Is that the best you have? What else do you have? And I went through some of the key highlights, including the photograph I was mentioning, which is one of the most damning of all. And there's a very fascinating history that goes with that, of the SWAT team already being there. And just above the vehicle, you can see this string of four windows in classroom 10 that are undamaged and so forth. And, you know, this went on for 15 minutes or so. And I decided, well, this was so significant that I better write it up. So I wrote up a blog in that same series about debunking Sandy Hook debunkers. This one, I think, was number three, about the hit piece interview with Inside Edition. Well, that was the day that I had the interview, what was fresh in my mind. But what I would discover was, the consequence was, the following day, Amazon took down the book. And I received a notification from the subsidiary, which is CreateSpace, owned by Amazon, that had printed the book. And they said that it had been suppressed due to a violation of guidelines. But they did not specify what guidelines were violated, Heinrich. They said, review the guidelines. Well, I knew we passed all the guidelines on the 22nd of October, so there wasn't a question about whether we had or had not passed the guidelines. And if they were taking it down because it violated the guidelines, they had to know what guidelines had been violated, but they weren't telling me. So it was obvious to me that this was not a proper action, that it was politically motivated, for which I would acquire a great deal of further confirmation. So I made the decision with my series editor, Mike Pelichek, to put the book available for free as a PDF. And I was going to be on with Jeff Rentz that night, where I'm a regular twice a month. And it just so happened that evening I was going to be on with Jeff, and he'd asked me to bring in Alan William Powell from Australia, who had unearthed all these photographs. So I was able to go on with Jeff that night and announce that we were making the PDF available for free to the public, and have Alan there to talk about the treasure trove of photographs, which would wind up constituting two of the chapters. Chapter 7 is about the furnishing of the Lanza home, mm-hmm, right. to use it as a prop, which included Heinrich, a fascinating photograph of the Nancy Lanza bedroom where Adam, her ostensive son, is supposed to have shot her four times in the head. And there's a little bit of red on the top of the bed, but it's not blood. It looks to me more like it, and it's not in copious quantity. It looked to me like it might be raspberry jam. There's a wooden chest at the foot of the bed, and on the wooden chest there's a set of papers, which we found in many of the other photographs, that are evaluation forms, keeping meticulous records about how they had furnished each of these different rooms. And then one of our other contributors, Kelly Watt, who runs a commercial and home cleaning service, with her astute eye noticed that beneath the left leg of the bed, there was a blue moving pad that in their haste they had forgotten to remove. I mean, this is all so embarrassing and obvious. So I went on with Jeff and with Alan, and we talked about, you know, some of this most important evidence. And, of course, I've never subsequently heard from CreateSpace or Amazon.com. They wiped the slate clean. The page on Amazon was completely eliminated. All those 80 reviews and a lot of discussion, I mean, it had generated a tremendous amount of interest. And the fact that it had sold nearly 500 copies in less than a month indicated it was going to be on the trajectory to become a bestseller. And I think after the Inside Edition camouflage probe of the book, that they were convinced it was just going to be devastating to Obama, delegitimizing the administration, which had placed so much emphasis on gun control, motivated by Sandy Hook, which, however, it had been complicit in arranging, where the whole thing was fake, and it went back several years, at least to 2009, when a number of these families came into Sandy Hook with free homes on Christmas Eve, which is, any real estate agent will tell you, no real estate transactions are done on Christmas Eve, but in this case, a whole host of those families receive free homes. And when people,
really?
Yeah, and when people ask themselves, you know, what could have been in it for them to perform this feat of deception? Well, number one, these are people who think that, you know, controlling guns is really an important thing to do. They're dedicated to it. They tend to be zealots. Number two, they've been rewarded financially tremendously because the American people in their immense generosity have given a minimum of $27 million, estimates up to $130 million for the 26 families. So they pocketed in excess of $1 million a family. Even the first responders, these are police who are just playing a role in the charade, have been handsomely rewarded. I regard this as hush money, Heinrich, by $2.3 million in grants distributed to them for their suffering, you know, the anguish they went through of having to cope with this. And then the Newtown School Board was rewarded with a $50 million grant to build a new kindergarten through fourth grade school to replace Sandy Hook. And I did a survey and found the average cost of a kindergarten through fourth grade school across country is only $7 million. So they got seven times $7 million to build a new school at Sandy Hook. What is this to be, the Taj Mahal of elementary school?
Right, exactly. Well, it's interesting that there seems to be only some of these shootings where the families receive, I mean, incredible amounts of money. It's just, it's outrageous. I think it was the same in Charleston. It was the same in a couple of recent cases. I forget their names now, but it's like, that's in itself kind of a giveaway that something else is going on here.
Well, I'll tell you, Heinrich, when you mentioned Charleston, each of these has been cleverly designed as a psyop to target a particular segment of the American population. When you talk about Sandy Hook, that was designed as a psyop to instill fear into parents. I mean, after all, 20 children being killed.
Right.
Charleston was designed to instill fear into the black community. I mean, you got nine reputable black folks who are killed in a church by a young white guy.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of evidence that that was a fabrication, too. For example, he's got a jacket that the original photograph says no patches, but two apartheid patches have been added to it, photoshopped. We have a video of him entering the church at 0800. Someone didn't know a 24-hour clock and thought that meant 8 p.m. when it actually means 8 a.m. If he had actually shot up the church and reloaded as is claimed, then the pews would have been shattered, wood particles, blood all over the place, the altar a mess. Instead, they went ahead and held a conventional church service within 48 hours, which is preposterous if it had been real. Hillary Clinton just happened to be in town that day and sent her personal photographer to the church for photographs that I'm sure, Heinrich, are going to show up during her campaign subsequently.
Right. Exactly.
And then they had an open casket for this preacher, Clementa Pinckney, who was very well known, mm-hmm. but it looked nothing like Clementa. It looked like a person with a much darker complexion, a much thicker neck, of apparently Haitian descent, whereas Clementa Pinckney was an African-American. So I mean, that is another fabricated case. We had one out in Oregon, and this was, you know, this shooter allegedly would ask each of the students their religion. If they said they were Christian, he'd shoot them in the head, right? Right. Well, obviously, that's to terrorize a Christian community. There are quite a few in the United States. But this was obviously another setup. For example, there was no surge of ambulances, no rush of EMTs. It was one group of students that were at play acting as first responders, and they all knew they were going to be on television. So they put on a pink T-shirt for their cause of the month, which was breast cancer awareness. I mean, it was ridiculous. And just today, Heinrich, we have a purported shooting in San Bernardino, California. I was watching it on television. No surge of ambulance, no intensity, a lot of vague descriptions. And would you believe this is taking place in relation to a facility for the disabled and the homeless?
Really?
I mean, see, it's another clever psyop for another segment of the community. I mean, if you didn't pay attention, you wouldn't realize how ridiculous these things are. I mean, it's stunning, but it's a pure psyop manipulation of the American people to instill fear into the population, to make us more amenable to the political agenda of the Obama administration. And since that's the classic definition of terrorism, what this means is that the Obama administration has been practicing terrorism on the American people.
Well, you know, I think I want to ask you a bit more about some of these other ones later, and we'll see if something new comes in as we speak here at the time of this recording about the latest shooting, if we can get some answers or whatnot on that. But let's return back to Sandy Hook again and talk a bit more about, you know, some of the highlights, the big notes. Actually, let me ask you about what happened to the school then, because you said it was closed in 2008, and obviously we're coming up now on the three-year anniversary of this very, very odd event. It took place December 14th, 2012. So what happened in the meantime there, and how were things set up at the school to kind of to set the stage, so to speak, for this entire event?
Well, it's fascinating given the photographic record we have now. For example, in Chapter 8, provided by Alan William Powell, we even have the moving vans coming there to bring furniture into the school to refurbish it. We have nameplates for a classroom that still have the moving sticker on it. We have that key photograph of the SWAT team already there, the windows of Classroom 10 unbroken, and the flag at full mast. This was, turns out, Alan initially thought it was taken in the morning of the 14th, but in fact it turns out to have been taken in the evening of the 13th. And the key is that the undamaged windows show that the alleged crime had not yet been committed. We have crime scene tape, again, for a crime not yet to be committed. We have other photographs that show the unbroken windows, and you can tell by comparing them that the windows are unbroken in this most important photograph. We have other photographs showing the windows broken. In fact, we even have photographs of the perps drilling holes in the window frame, Heinrich. Get this. You have forensic photographs with pink rods inserted to what are supposed to be bullet holes. They're all at exactly 50-degree angles, and they're all parallel to one another. As a former Marine Corps officer who used to supervise recruit training, including marksmanship, at Ensign Range Camp Pendleton, when I was a series commander and had 15 drill instructors and 300 recruits under my command, this is preposterous. This is completely ridiculous. And, you know, so, I mean, the evidence we have is places the whole matter beyond any doubt. I say typically beyond reasonable doubt, because what it means is you compare the alternatives or any alternative hypothesis to this having been a drill, no alternative explanation is reasonable given the evidence we have at our disposal.
Yep, exactly. Now, there's a lot of components to it, and we'll talk about this and kind of break this down. What are some of the biggest red flags that you'd just like to kind of, off the top of your head, get out to people who let's assume we have some listening to us that aren't too familiar with the event, they haven't looked into it that much. How would you present it to them?
Right. Well, the official narrative has this 20-year-old young man who's about 6 feet tall and weighs only 112 pounds, shooting his mother to death at home with a .22 caliber rifle, which turns out to be bereft of any fingerprints, and then going to this elementary school and blasting a big hole in a glass plate there to make entry. But we discovered none of the glass is crushed. We even have 16 Connecticut State Troopers providing affidavits claiming they entered the same way, which is absurd, is Wolfgang Halbig, who's a former Florida State Trooper, a former U.S. Customs agent, a former principal, and a nationally recognized school safety expert, has observed. The Three Stooges would have done better. Curly would have gone in to open the door for Larry and Moe. I mean, the idea you'd have 16 heavily armed state troopers entering through this piece of glass where the uniform could be cut and so forth is just absurd. And none of the furniture there on the inside in this little lobby area is the least bit disturbed. I mean, you couldn't have all this activity taking place. So it's all completely staged, fabricated, fake. He supposedly shoots 20 children with a remarkable kill-to-target ratio on the order of 96%. The children are all supposed to be shot 3 to 11 times, but the medical examiner, claiming to have done the autopsy, he couldn't remember how many were girls, how many were boys. He didn't even remember the caliber of the weapon, which was a .223 Bushmaster. It's a civilian model of the AR-15. And then the Adam is supposed to have shot himself. Well, this is all ludicrous. Let me give you just one key point about it. The Danbury State's attorney, Stephen Sadinsky, did the official report on Sandy Hook shooting. It doesn't list the names, the ages, or the sex of any of the victims, which is odd all by itself. But more importantly, it does not tie together the shooter with the weapons he's alleged to have used or the victims. For example, I've already mentioned in the case of his mother that we had a .22 caliber rifle with no fingerprints. Now, that's pretty damn peculiar. You know, why would he wipe his fingerprints off a rifle under these circumstances? And what Sadinsky reports in a crucial footnote that a casual reader might even overlook, they had some 154 lead slugs from the bullets that were fired. But according to the footnote, they could not match even one to the weapon he was supposed to have used, which means there's a complete failure to create a causal nexus that links the alleged shooter with his weapons or the victims he's supposed to have killed. I mean, that is pretty bizarre all by itself.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, you know, there are so many people along the way here, too, that we need to talk about that show up and odd behaviors, weird things going on.
Yes. To get more of an overview of the kind you were inviting, I mean, once you realize this was a two-day event, that they had a rehearsal on the 13th and then went live on the 14th, you begin to understand a whole host of issues. For example, many of the participants didn't understand the difference, and they put up websites for donations to the survivors of the victims on the 13th, the day before. Adam Lanza's death was initially recorded in the Social Security Death Index on the 13th, the day before, which makes it rather incredible, even miraculous, that he should be shooting any children or his mother the following day after his demise. I mean, that's how ridiculous it is. But there were a whole lot of images that got mixed together that once you sort it out, once you realize it's 2 days, make great sense. For example, signs that it was a drill were right before our eyes, including a portable sign, "Everyone must check in." The boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons at the firehouse. Porta potties present from scratch. Many were wearing name tags on lanyards. Parents were bringing children to the scene. Think about it, Heinrich. What parent would bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre?
Right. No.
And having name tags on lanyards is typical of a FEMA drill because they're color-coded to correspond and identify their role in the drill. The porta potties. Wolfgang tried to find out who delivered the porta potties, and they wouldn't answer him even such a trivial, seemingly innocuous question because it would have revealed they were delivered on the 13th and blown the cover. The pizza boxes, the sign, "Everyone must check in." We actually discovered the FEMA manual for the drill for the rehearsal on the 13th and going live on the 14th. It has right start and stop dates, and it says right in the manual, "Everyone must check in. Refreshments and restrooms will be provided." Heinrich, this is just so absurd. And then get from the following day, the 14th, once you understand what happened, how we know it wasn't a massacre. There was no surge of EMTs into the building. No medevac helicopter was called. No string of ambulances to the school. No evacuation of what should have been 469 other students. No bodies were placed on the triage tarps. That's another sign of this shooting going on right now in Santa Barbara. There's no surge of ambulances. It was also true in the college shooting out in Oregon. No surge of ambulances, no rush of EMTs into the building. You have a few people acting very casually, no intensity. This was something noticed about the Sandy Hook event by a Los Angeles school safety expert whose name is Paul Preston, who explained to Sophia Smallstorm, who had produced the documentary Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions, that he himself had conducted, organized and conducted drills like this. And when he noticed the features of it, it didn't have any authenticity. So he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, and every one of them confirmed to him that it had been a drill, that no children had died, and it was done to promote gun control.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's talk about the kids a little bit, some of the weird things that happens along the way here, and where you think all of this kind of, where did they get all the kids from, and did any of the kids actually die? Was all of this kind of orchestrated? Tell us more about that.
No one died at Sandy Hook. Let's be real clear about this. No one died. Even the Obama officials were assuring Paul Preston, no one died. It was just a drill, but it was presented as a live event. And to understand, you can go back to the press conference that Governor Malloy held the day of the shooting, the alleged shooting, where he explained that he and the lieutenant governor had been spoken to, that something like this might happen, which got me thinking, spoken to by whom? Something like this? What could he possibly mean? There were really only two alternatives. One, he'd been warned that there might be a shooting. Someone would go berserk, come into a school and shoot up a bunch of kids in a Connecticut public school, in which case he, as governor, ought to have signaled to the school systems they ought to enhance their security to make sure it didn't happen. But he didn't do that, Heinrich. Instead, the alternative is that he was informed that they were going to take an abandoned school, conduct a drill, and present it as a live event in order to promote gun control, which is exactly what happened. And when I looked into by whom, I discovered that, lo and behold, on the 27th of November, he'd received a visit from Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the Obama administration, who was known to be an anti-gun zealot. For example, we have footage of him addressing a National Democratic Women's Conference in Washington, D.C. back in 1995, where he uses the word, this is his word, brainwash. He says, we've got to brainwash the American people to change their attitudes about guns. So it yep. is clear that it was Eric Holder, by whom he was told they were going to take an abandoned school, conduct a drill, present it as a live event to promote gun control. Barack Obama himself got deeply invested in this, went up to Sandy, had a bunch of these children sitting on his lap and all that. And would you believe, on the 16th of January 2013, this is 1 month and 2 days after the alleged event, he signed no less than 23 executive orders to control Americans' access to weapons in violation of the Second Amendment, the defense of which he took an oath when he was sworn into office, to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic, which includes, of course, all the amendments thereto, including the second, which states that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Mm, yeah, this is definitely what they're going after. I'm just seeing some of the, as usual, of course, it's just exploding online in terms of the San Bernardino shooting here now, how people all are calling for gun control. I mean, it's kind of obvious, but it needs to be repeated over and over again that the tactics here are very, very basic, you know?
They're transparent once you understand, once you realize all of these shootings are simply staged. One of the most obvious was this Virginia reporter who allegedly was shot by a very large black man who walked up to where she was doing an interview on a wooden walkway where his weight, which was nearly 300 pounds, would have made lots of creaking sounds. It would have been obvious he was approaching them, but they pretended they didn't notice his presence. He gets right up behind the cameraman, who's actually panned away, and waits until he turns toward the reporter, who has to have seen him, then holds up his handgun and shoots her repeatedly, but she has no reaction, no bullets hit her, there's no blood. It, we even come back with an aerial shot, and there's no blood on the wooden balcony at all. And the whole thing is another stage. Turns out her father is a gun control zealot. Her father is a gun control zealot.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they have people pre-positioned to call in and demand gun control. I mean, this is all you know, not only are the event staged, but so is the purported public response to the event. That's equally managed and manipulated.
Yeah, so, and we're going to get into motives a bit later here. We'll talk some more about, you know, the who and the why and all that kind of stuff. But let's go back to the children again. Were they, the children, do you think, of the families that lived in Newtown? Did they get them from there, or were they?
No, it was a real mix. And they appear to have used photographs of children at a much younger age. For example, we have a video from one of the funerals, which were all closed casket, with one exception where the face was obscured and you couldn't really tell whether it was animal, mineral, or vegetable. But we have one of these funerals where the young man attended his own funeral, Tommy Mattioli. He was there for his own funeral. Now, he's quite a bit older than he was when he was six. We have another case of a fellow named Neil Lewis, whose son Jesse is alleged to have been among the dear departed. And Neil goes to testify to Congress with a huge framed photograph of him and Jesse. And you look at Jesse, and he's about 4 months old. So you say, okay, now Jesse, 4 months, he's got to be 6 years older to be a first grader and all that. And then you look at Neil, who's a very young-looking man, and you say, now does this Neil, who's testifying, who's got all kinds of wrinkles in his face, is he only 6 years older than he was in the photograph? And the answer is no, he's 16 or 20 years older. So, I mean, this is typical of the kind of fraud and fakery that was taking place. And when they sent a whole lot of young people to sing at the Super Bowl, we have been unable to find any records, any parental permissions, no names of those who participated were ever given. The whole thing was just to build on the emotional impact. So Americans were supposed to be there swooning and just feeling pitiful for all, you know, these poor children and their friends who'd been killed and the parents, and get out their wallets and send more money to get more donations to these complete frauds. I mean, the idea was to generate a cadre of anti-gun lobbyists with seemingly impeccable credentials because they lost children at Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. That was the ideal, kind of.
Yep.
And also to create a new industry of healthcare, you know, programs for children who manifestly do not need them. But it's a new billion-dollar industry that Obama's also been promoting.
Oh, yeah. He's promoting a lot of things. Tell us a bit about Gene Rosen. He's the guy that the initial sign showed up behind of as well, if I remember some of the photos correct. But tell us what happened there with him.
Yeah, it's very interesting because they not only was the sign there initially, but apparently they put it back a couple of days later and shot again so that Shills could claim that the photograph of the sign was only there days later, like the 15th. But that's ridiculous. Hmm. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in. I mean, the sign was there. And here's another consideration. Gene Rosen, it turns out, had been giving lectures on behalf of FEMA about gun control before the event, Heinrich. Mm-hmm. And he claimed that five or six of these young people were let off, or a bus let them off in front of his house. Well, look, that school should have had, you know, according to Steven Sedensky in his final report, there were 489 students there that day. You subtract 20, there should have been 469. If you assume 50 per bus, right, you're going to have maybe a dozen buses to take all these kids. But there were no buses there at all, no buses at all. In fact, the police claimed the evacuation was taking place at specific times and locations, but we have dash cam footage showing there are no students in the parking lot being evacuated at times and places specified by the police. Now, getting back to Gene Rosen, there weren't any buses taking kids out of Sandy Hook. So what's a bus doing unloading kids? Not only that, Gene Rosen was neither the custodian nor the parent of any of these kids. So what in the world would they be doing letting them off at the home of Gene Rosen, who claimed he brought them into the house and gave them orange juice and stuffed animals to play with? Well,
right. Mm-hmm.
I've got grandkids, and by the time you're, you know, a first grader, stuffed animals are a bit passe. Besides, what would Gene Rosen be doing with a bunch of stuffed animals? I mean, this whole thing is completely fabricated. I had the former chief psychologist for the FBI, whom I happen to know personally because he was very interested in my research on JFK. It had drawn him in, and he wanted to meet me. He flew out here to Madison from Washington, D.C. He has subsequently arranged for me to speak at the National Press Club and so forth. And I said, Alan, will you give me an analysis? And he wrote up an analysis and found everything Gene Rosen was saying was completely incredible, that it simply didn't add up. Among the other points made is Gene Rosen claimed he heard shooting coming from the school, but he did not call 911. Well, if he heard shooting coming from the school, why in the world wouldn't he have called 911? And then the story, as I've already explained, about the kids coming to his house and the orange juice and stuffed animals, it's just preposterous.
Yeah, it's very bizarre with Gene Rosen, and there was a whole thing. Didn't he he spoke out to the media later and talked about how he had been accosted and harassed and all this kind of stuff? Wasn't that Gene Rosen?
Well, it may very well have been, but, I mean, that's all rubbish. You know, nobody was accosting these people. I mean, they were supposed to be victims or somehow involved in this great tragedy, which the media just carried forward with great fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely ridiculous. Even the few media reports from the 14th, and there were a couple that were rather good. One, for example, reported that Adam Lanza appeared to be a fictional character, that they couldn't find any actual evidence that there was such a person as Adam Lanza. And, you know, if it just went on and on. But if it weren't for the media, Heinrich, this would never have been successful.
No, of course not. It's always about the media. It's always about how they spin it, how they ramp it up in the beginning. And it's usually, of course, pretty curious when they have things lined out already and very, they know where to go with the script, basically. But one of the things I wanted to ask you a bit more about is we have, you know, Gene Rosen, and then we have this aspect of the other family, the Parker family. Also very strange character, and obviously him, most of us, most of our listeners have seen the video of him getting into character and, you know, laughing beforehand.
Yes.
It's so bizarre. You know?
This is the day after the shooting, so this will be on the 15th. He's coming out of the building, he's jocular, he's laughing, he's happy, and then he turns and sees the press. He stops and hyperventilates to get into character, then begins talking about the loss of his daughter, Emily, but has the presence of mind to remember to mention her donation website.
Yep.
I mean, it's just too much.
Yep.
And a lot of time has been spent on many of these family photographs, and the one with there's an Emily Christmas photograph of the Parker family that appears to have several elements of photoshopping. And then, you know, Emily or her daughter, but wearing her sister, wearing the very same clothing that Emily had been wearing in the Christmas photograph is with Obama. I mean, it just goes on and on. And there's no way Obama did not know what was going on here. It involved not only these families who are play acting, but going to be handsomely rewarded. The Newtown School Board knew about it. The Newtown Police Department knew about it. The Connecticut State Police knew about it. The medical examiner knew about it. The governor knew about it. The lieutenant governor, the attorney general of the United States, and the president all knew about it. They were all complicit in this elaborate charade, which is just a stunning indictment of the degree of corruption of the American government.
Now, as far as I heard, none of the parents were actually allowed to see their children afterwards, right?
How ridiculous is that?
Who would agree to that? I mean, I'm trying to understand a little bit more in terms of, was there any one of these people that was dragged into this against their will in some way, they didn't know what was going on?
No. They have this all lined up. These are all willing participants, eager to play their roles.
Because otherwise they would have fought this, obviously, right?
Oh,
they would
of course.
Have, yeah.
I mean, I'm a parent. If I had a child who had been purportedly killed, there's no way you could stop me from seeing
right.
the body.
Of course.
And Wayne Carver explained that it was easier emotionally just to show him photographs. They didn't allow even EMTs into the building. In fact, the fire chief, it's the firehouse, and his daughter, they're only a quarter mile up the road. They're both EMT qualified. They came rushing down to the school, and they were a bit floored when they weren't allowed access. But, of course, they weren't allowed access because there were no bodies there. I mean, they had to keep them out or they would have blown the whole thing. It's like when they tore down the school. Though participants in deconstructing the school were required to take lifetime gag orders about not talking about what they'd seen or hadn't seen. Heinrich, what they
really?
Hadn't seen was no blood on the floor and no pockmarks from bullets in the wall. Yeah, lifetime gag orders.
Really? How much was any of this photographed and documented before the school was torn down? It was in November 13, I think, the following year that it was demolished, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And was anything photographed, documented, anything? I mean, it's a crime scene, right?
Yeah, it was, but I have yet to see a single photograph of, you know, the crime scene from the inside that indicated that a crime had been committed. I mean, we have some from inside. showing the, you know, classroom just full of storage. In some cases, it's all backed up to the windows of the classroom. I mean, it's ridiculous. And we had, you know, the articles, many of the articles in the book had appeared before and then were, you know, refined or used as they were if they required no tweaking. We had some with the videos of the inside and outside of the school, and many teachers reported that that's what they do with abandoned schools. They use them for storage. We had plumbers observing that this was obviously not ADA compatible, that they'd taken out one commode to try to make it look as though it were wheelchair accessible when it was not. In other words, there were signs of attempting to do a perfunctory effort to make it look as though they were compliant with Americans for Disability requirements when they were not.
So obviously the thing here that we try to get the listeners to understand is that there's not, it's taking the event and saying it's all manufactured, it's all created. In other words, we can't go, for example, after Lanza and say, okay, well, what did he live with? What did he do previously? Did he really do this? It becomes impossible if you try to take him and fit into the narrative, right? We have to take a bigger view than that, correct?
Well, there's a fantasy scenario about him, doing some kind of continuous dancing for 24 hours. I mean, it's ludicrous. He's supposed to have an interest in weapons, but in fact, the alcohol, tobacco, firearms agent responsible for investigating found no signs that he or his mother had ever been to any rifle range, ever practiced marksmanship, ever, period, ever. I mean, the whole thing is completely ridiculous. He was supposed to have had an aversion to metal, so he couldn't touch metal parts. Well, how do you fire a Bushmaster or even a .22 caliber rifle if you have an aversion to metal? It's insulting, Heinrich. What they gave us here was a complete pile of rubbish, incoherent nonsense, and the American people bought it.
Tell us what happened to his parents as well. You said his mom was I'm trying to get up closer to if there was any kind of court case involved in any of it. I don't know what happens. It might sound like a stupid question, but I don't know what happens when the perpetrator dies during an event like this. What happens afterwards?
Well, but nobody died. The mother didn't die.
Right. No. I'm talking about the official view through.
Let me tell you how bad it is. There was even an interview in the New Yorker by a fellow named Solomon that was supposed to be with Peter Lanza, the father, and it was complete rubbish. It was completely fabricated. He made all kinds of stupid remarks like it would have been better if Adam had never been born. No parent, no matter how their child turns out, would ever make an observation like that. And I tell you, anyone with an eye for literature, reading that, would recognize it was a complete puff job. It was just fabricated. It was fake. They talk about him having had a brother, Ryan, but even Ryan's existence, it seems to me, is up in the air. Nancy Lanza, I don't believe there ever was one. I mean, it's so much more convenient, Heinrich, if you don't have to deal with real people. And they discovered after 9/11, it's much better just to fake it and not have any dead people, because then they can have aggrieved parents like the Jersey girls. These are four women who were survivors of husbands who died on 9/11, who are unrelenting and forced the Bush-Cheney administration into actually conducting an investigation of 9/11, which they put off for 441 days.
Hmm. All right. Interesting. So no court, nothing has been unraveled in court afterwards with this case? Is that correct?
This is interesting. Wolfgang Halbig became, you know, very concerned when he discovered his FOIA requests were going unanswered. His phone calls weren't being returned. And the next thing he knew, there were two homicide detectives from a local precinct on his doorstep in a gated community where he resides in Florida, telling him on behalf of the Connecticut State Police that if he continued to raise questions about Sandy Hook, they'd have him prosecuted. Well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Wolfgang's a bulldog, very unrelenting. I traveled with him up to Sandy Hook. We made an appearance together before the Newtown Board of Education. We were allocated 3 minutes. During my 3 minutes, among other points, I raised the question, when were the parents notified that their children were attending school in a toxic waste dump? Now, Wolfgang has found an attorney who had the gumption to pursue it, went into formal FOIA hearings, which were being undermined by the representative of the state, a guy named Monte Frank, who was, you know, telling Wolfgang's witnesses they didn't have to appear after they'd been summoned by a subpoena, and in other ways attempting to thwart it. But among the minor victories of Wolfgang's hearings was he got hundreds of photographs of the school in this dilapidated state, which I have, you know, published in the book and elsewhere. And also he had the first select man of Newtown, which is equivalent to the mayor, a woman by the name of Patricia LaLorda. When questioned repeatedly about the portable sign, everyone was checked in, finally conceded it had been placed there by Homeland Security.
So we're going to take a break shortly here, but let's just kind of talk. There's many more questions I have for you, obviously, about the book and about surrounding shootings as well. We'll see if we can find out some more about the San Bernardino in the break here, too. But obviously, the book then is available for free if people want to get it online. Where can they go to do that? And then you can tell us if they want to get a copy and support you guys, what they can do as well.
Well, there are many different websites where you can obtain it for free. Rents.com is one, because that night I went on with Rents and made it available. But many other websites have made it available. Mike Adams, the health ranger, has made it available. He had two wonderful articles about it. And a new article about the book having been banned has just appeared. We can talk about it after the break. If you go to my blogs, jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, you can look at my blogs. I think my last 10 blogs are all about Sandy Hook. But get this, Heinrich. We have just obtained a new printer, a new distributor, and we now have the book in a bound volume available again at moonrockbooks.com. So you can have the best of the both worlds. When we did the book, we printed the photographs in black and white because it would have been too expensive to put them in color. But now you can get them in color for free with one of the PDFs, which are going to remain available to the public at no charge. You can look at every one of the photographs in color with great clarity and precision, and then you have the best set of the photographs. And if you like having a bound volume, which you can carry with you, take aboard a plane or whatever, as opposed to electronic, you can obtain it now at moonrockbooks.com.
Yeah, we'll make sure to have that link up there as well, of course. And it kind of is released, I guess, is in a series, right, with the previous book that we talk about as well. And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Is that correct?
And there will be sequels, too.
Right. All right. Very good. jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, main website for James, and we'll have the links to the book, both the PDF version and also the purchases version as well, up on the website. All right, we'll take a short break right here. Stay with us, James. We'll be right back with the second hour.
You were only fooling, but I was falling in love. It's a story as old as Adam and Eve. I was making love, but you were making believe. You lied to me with kisses. I've tried to stop dreaming on, but you were only fooling me while I was falling in love.
You know, you were just fooling, honey, jiving me while I was falling head over heels in love. It's a story as old as Adam and Eve. I was making love, but all the time you were only making believe.
You lied to me with kisses. I've tried to stop dreaming on,
but you were only fooling me while I was falling in
love. Hour two with James Fetzer is coming up. We are going to talk a bit more about the Boston bombings and other false flags going back before Sandy Hook and also after, like the Aurora shooting in Colorado a year later. And then, of course, we had Paris, Charlie Hebdo. And we also talk a bit more about San Bernardino, the most recent one in California. A bit more information came into us during the break that we'll discuss briefly as well. And I did get a chance to talk with James about his take on the problem with Islam in Europe. Rapes, crime, conflict, and other issues that many times people who reach for the false flag explanation seem to either avoid or miss altogether, in my opinion at least. I mean, in some cases, I think, you know, they might go for the false flag because in a strange roundabout way, it's kind of comforting to them because otherwise it would mean that there is a problem with multiculturalism and the diversity that these same elites who are pulling off these false flags have been pushing on us for years. And that's true, isn't it? It seems to be that people either go for one or the other. My point is, why can't both be true? Not at the same time, of course. No one is saying that, but there are false flags, yes, but there's also a massive problem with mass immigration into Europe and the ensuing culture wars and loss of ethnic solidarity and breakdown of trust within European society. We'll talk about that and much more in the second hour with James Fetzer. So do join us at redicemembers.com. If you're not yet a member, subscribe and tune in. I also want to mention that we're going to bump the subscription prices up in about a week from now. About a week and a half. We haven't raised our prices since we started in 2006. We're coming up on the 10th year anniversary here, coming into next year. And unfortunately, as you probably know all too well, the currencies we use are being devalued all the time. You pay more for less, basically. So if you have been thinking about signing up, do that now before we nudge the prices for a membership. And if you have a recurring subscription, you know, one that auto-renews, this will not change for you, obviously. We can't begin to charge you more for something like this in the middle of it. So you'll be on the same price, so this will remain the same, so don't worry about that. This will only be for new members that are coming in that want to sign up for a membership. So we have one-time payments from 3 months up to 2 years, and we also have a recurring three-month subscription that auto-renews. And so if you want a good deal, access to, you know, over 1,000 radio shows, interviews on a ton of different topics, and videos, inside episodes, and films, and more added onto it every week, then sign up for a three-month recurring subscription now. You know, get the best deal, and you'll keep paying lower prices as well, so that you who might have been listening for a long time but not yet subscribed, think about doing that now while we do some, you know, rearranging in the sign-up section there. And we're going to add U.S. dollars as a currency as well to make it easier for American listeners, so you don't have to mess with the transaction rates and all that kind of stuff. But the dollar and the euro are remarkably almost the same in value right now. I remember when you could get, what, a dollar and a half for a euro not too long ago. So thank you so much to the European Union for tanking our currency there. Well done. Good job, boys. We're also going to add Bitcoin, by the way. Yes, that is coming. We've been working on that for some time, and we apologize for the delay, but we will bring in Bitcoin soon. So, anyway, sign up, redicemembers.com, support an independent radio program that spares you from commercial interruptions and blinking banners on the website. All right, we have more coming, folks. Jay Dyer, Gavin Kilgore, Jenny Upton, Pete Papaherakles, and Victor Thorne, and also Libertarian Realist will join us, to name a few. All right, we'll be right back with James Fetzer. Stay with us. Thank you for listening. Talk to you after the break.